Iran's president, who is on an official visit to Russia, says Tehran and Moscow can join hands to counter U.S. unilateralism. Saudi-led warplanes ratchet up raids on Yemen, striking the international airport in the capital Sana'a and the strategic port of Hodeidah. Also ahead, several European countries urge Israel to stop building new settlements in the occupied East al-Quds after the regime approved construction of 3,500 settler units last month. Thank you for joining us. Now, top story, Iranian President Ibrahim Raisi says there is no hindrance lying in the way of the improvement of relations between Iran and Russia. He made the remarks in a meeting with his Russian counterpart Vladimir Putin in Moscow. During the meeting, the two sides also discussed ways to expand mutual ties in various areas. Marina Kurtanova has more in this report.
Iran's President Ibrahim Raisi made an official visit to Moscow on Wednesday at the invitation of his Russian counterpart Vladimir Putin. This is the first trip to Russia by an Iranian president since 2017. During a meeting in the Kremlin, the two sides set for talks on mutual and regional issues.
We have no limitation for expansion and development of ties with Russia and are after establishment of strategic relations with Moscow. We can expand our relations in economy, trade on the political track. We are not talking about momentary relations. We are talking about a sustainable and strategic relationship.
For his part, the Russian president said Iran-Russia's relations have been constantly improving. He also acknowledged Tehran and Moscow's contribution to Syria's transition past the terrorist threats.
Thanks to our efforts, we have largely succeeded in helping the Syrian government overcome the threats posed by international terrorism. Now, of course, both you and us are concerned about the situation that is developing in Afghanistan. I would like to discuss all these issues with you to know your position on these problems. And of course, it is very important for me to know your position on the JCPOA.
Iran's Raisi underlined that his country will never give in to the West's pressure, including the U.S., adding that Iran is seeking to remove the U.S. illegal and unilateral sanctions.
We have been confronting the U.S. for more than 40 years. We hope that these efforts would lead to removal of the sanctions. The threat of sanctions cannot come in the way of Iran's progress.
Ahead of the visit of Iran's Raisi to Moscow, Iranian Foreign Minister Hussein Amir Abdollahian said that his country followed a new roadmap to deepen ties with Moscow, adding that Iran and Russia were determined to update a 20-year cooperation treaty that they signed in 2001.
This is Iranian president's third foreign trip since taking office in July last year. The visit is seen by observers as the latest efforts by Iran and Russia to cement stronger ties amid U.S. hostile policies towards both countries. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
Iran and the three European signatories to the 2015 deal, also known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, have held talks today in the Austrian capital. Our Vienna correspondent Hermeleski joined us earlier with an update. She said Iran has expressed its readiness to comply with the JCPOA commitments once the country is assured that sanctions will be removed in a verifiable manner.
But what we know from sources close to the talks is that at the moment there are still some sticking points, both when it comes to the issue of the list of sanctions that need to be removed by the Americans, and also on the issues of verification and guarantees, how the sanctions removal can be effectively verified for Iran, and how the U.S. can give guarantees to Iran that it will not withdraw from the deal again or reimpose sanctions once it is back in the JCPOA. And also there are still sticking points when it comes to the issue of implementation or sequencing. That would mean what actions, practical steps need to be taken by both Iran and the Americans to have the JCPOA restored. On the issue of sequencing, Iran has said time and again, before you might know that it will only go back to its nuclear commitments after the effective removal of sanctions, after it has verified the removal of sanctions that need to be removed and are in violation of the JCPOA. We'll have to see if that can actually be achieved, but Iran has said that this is what it wants. What sources are saying is that at this stage, despite the fact that there are sticking points, besides it is possible for them to overcome these differences, they're saying that these are not insurmountable issues, they can be overcome, and if there is the political will to do so, an agreement could be possible, as Iran's foreign ministry spokesman said, at a good pace.
Saudi Arabia carries out fresh airstrikes, pounding several areas across its southern neighbor. Saudi warplanes have carried out 6 raids on Sana'a International Airport and its adjacent areas. They've also hit the port city of Hodeidah and a number of other cities. This after the Yemeni army countered a large-scale advance of the mercenaries in the south. The army fired 2 ballistic missiles, killing and injuring more than 50 militants. Saudi Arabia, along with its regional allies, launched a devastating war on Yemen 7 years ago to reinstate a friendly government. Hundreds of thousands of Yemenis, mostly civilians, have been killed and millions displaced since then. Now, the foreign ministries of France, Germany, Italy and Spain urge Israel to stop the construction of new settlements in east-occupied Al-Quds. The European ministries say the plan to build hundreds of new settler units in East Al-Quds is in violation of international law. They are also worried about the evictions and demolitions of Palestinian families in the Flashpoint neighborhood of Sheikh Jarrah in Al-Quds. The ministers say that such measures are illegal under international law, adding that evictions and demolitions pose the risk of fueling tensions. The UN Security Council has in several resolutions condemned Israel's settlement expansion in the occupied Palestinian territories. And Iran's UN envoy says the worsening situation in the occupied Palestinian territories poses a threat to international peace and security. In an address to the UN Security Council, Majid Takht-Ravanchi says the UN inaction has emboldened Israel to continue its war crimes against the Palestinian people. He says the perpetrators of such crimes must be brought to justice. The Iranian ambassador calls on the Council to oblige Israel to end its systematic violations of human rights and international humanitarian law. Takht-Ravanchi rejects the Israeli accusations that Iran is a threat to peace. He says Israel levels such allegations to distract attention from its brutalities against Palestinians. Earlier we spoke to political commentator David Yerubian. He says Israel has been posing a threat to peace in the region since 1948.
Regarding the issue of who actually poses a threat to peace in the region, we can let history speak for itself. Israel has been attacking its neighbors every single year of its existence since 1948 and has continued its ethnic cleansing activities and its genocidal war against the Palestinian people, whereas Iran has not attacked another country in almost 300 years. So, leaving that issue there, let's consider Takht-Ravanchi's comments about the UN Security Council and how it refuses to take Israel to task for its ongoing violations of international law. Just over 5 years ago, the United Nations Security Council passed Resolution 2334 with a 14-0 vote. In this case, the United States abstained. And in Resolution 2334, the Security Council found Israel to be in flagrant violation of international law regarding its ongoing settlement activity in Palestinian territories occupied since 1967, including East Jerusalem.
The U.S. president ups the ante against Russia in his inauguration anniversary presser, vowing to impose tough sanctions on Moscow if Ukraine is invaded.
And so I think what you're going to see is that Russia will be held accountable if it invades. And it depends on what it does. It's one thing if it's a minor incursion, and then we end up having to fight about what to do and not do, etc. But if they actually do what they're capable of doing with the force amassed on the border, it is going to be a disaster for Russia if they further invade Ukraine, and that our allies and partners are ready to impose severe cost and significant harm on Russia and the Russian economy.
Biden says his guess is that Russian President Vladimir Putin will launch an incursion into Ukraine. However, he notes that Putin does not want a full-blown war. Biden warns that Russia will no longer be able to deal in dollars in case of an act of aggression. He adds that Washington could work out a plan whether to station, quote, strategic weapons in Ukraine. Biden says it was unlikely that Ukraine could join NATO in the near term, as it still needed to work on democratic reforms. Political commentator Vladimir Goldstein says the Ukrainian crisis is primarily because the West disregards the fact that Russia is not interested in NATO expanding towards its border.
What has to be clear to your audience is that Russia is not interested in invading Ukraine. This is not in their strategic interest, not in their, in tactical interest. What they want to do is to sit with the West and ask them not to expand the NATO. And they keep on saying it in one terms, in another terms. And the West does want to face it. They do not want to face their absolutely aggressive and reckless politics, pushing NATO, spending too much money on armaments, on defense sector, channeling money away from regular projects to the military. So they need to come up with the story that Russia is aggressive. Russia is not interested in Ukraine. So just this is like totally red herring, and Biden knows it, and State Department knows it, and NATO knows it, but they keep on pushing it just because it helps the gullible public buy it. I find this very, very kind of silly and outrageous, but that's the way it is. This is not the first time, this is not the last time the West comes up with a red herring and starts chasing it.
The controversy over the so-called Partygate scandal in the UK is far from over. The British Prime Minister once again faces calls for resignation amid a revolt within his own party over new revelations about the 2020 Downing Street party.
Shown themselves incapable of offering the leadership and government this country deserves.
No matter the excuse, there is no excuse for taking the British people for fools. Will the Prime Minister agree it is now time for him to resign?
Boris Johnson is facing yet another grilling from the opposition in Parliament. He not only deflected again the resignation's call, but said he is intensely proud of what his government has done. The latest round of pressure over Johnson's breach of COVID rules comes amid reports that lawmakers from his own party are turning their backs on him. The Daily Telegraph says so far 12 Tories have submitted letters of no confidence in him. So far, several leaked videos and emails have revealed about the parties held at Downing Street Garden and other government departments, but Johnson says nothing can be confirmed until a senior government official concludes an internal investigation. A ministerial report has warned in-work poverty in Italy was at worrying levels in 2019, with more than 1 out of 10 workers on the poverty line, a situation that today has presumably been exacerbated by the COVID pandemic. Max Cervilli reports from the Italian capital, Rome.
A report by Italy's Labour Ministry Commission on the working poor has rung the alarm bell over in-work poverty in the country. About 12% of workers are in a situation of poverty, the report has highlighted, using pre-pandemic 2019 figures from the European Statistical Agency Eurostat. While in work, their net income is 60% below Italy's average household income.
It is very hard to earn a living under the current working conditions. I was working for a delivery service until not long ago and was paid less than I was promised. How can one live on 700 to 800 euros a month in a city like Rome?
In southern Italy, the situation is even worse. A large number of people are forced to work in the black economy. Many of my friends are in a very difficult working situation and are mulling over going abroad.
In-work poverty is spread mostly among those who work up to 7 months a year. The ministerial report has also warned that one out of four workers is underpaid, receiving a yearly wage 60% lower than the average salary rate in Italy.
Working is not always enough to ward off poverty. In Italy, the phenomenon of in-work poverty is more grave than in the rest of the European Union. The percentage of the working poor has significantly increased across the old continent since the adoption of the single currency 20 years ago.
The report must be read with great concern, considering it was compiled using pre-pandemic figures. When Italy adopted the euro, the exchange rate with the lira was highly unfavourable, and for about two decades, low inflation coupling with stagnating economic growth has not helped much. It is important to stress that the report also proposes the introduction of a minimum wage and a sort of in-work benefit to counter the worrying situation.
The economic situation in Italy has greatly worsened since the pandemic hit the country 2 years ago. Consecutive government's harsh measures to stop the spread of coronavirus, which have included the adoption of vaccine passports to access workplaces and leisure facilities, have heavily impacted the economy, with small and medium-sized businesses the hardest hit. Meanwhile, the number of COVID-infected people in the country remains high, with over 190,000 new cases and 380 more victims recorded on Wednesday. Max Civili, Rome.
That brings it into our bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight. Saudi Arabia courted the world's top companies to supposedly modernize its economy. Instead, the business environment has grown more hostile and investors are souring under oil-rich kingdom. Foreign investment in Saudi Arabia has remained stubbornly low, and some companies are scaling back their operations or delaying promised expansion plans. We now present you an article written jointly by Stephen Callin and Justin Sheck. The piece is titled U.S. Businesses Sour on Saudi Arabia in Blow to Crown Prince's Growth Plans. According to a report by the Wall Street Journal, American companies are scaling back their operations in Saudi Arabia as business environment has become more hostile in the country. The report said General Electric, Uber Technologies Inc., and other firms were hit by surprise tax assessments, which often total tens of millions of dollars. Adding, construction company Bechtel Corp. sent some contractors home while it attempted to collect an over $1 billion in unpaid bills. Meanwhile, the report noted Bristol-Myers Squibb, Gilead Sciences, Ilk, and other drug makers have complained unsuccessfully for years that their intellectual property was being stolen. That has led to foreign investment in Saudi Arabia remaining stubbornly low, with some companies scaling back their operations or delaying promised expansion plans. The situation deals a blow to Saudi Arabia's crown prince, Mohammed bin Salman, the country's de facto leader, who promised in 2016 to build new industries unrelated to oil amid the country's urgent need to reduce its dependence on oil as the global economy moves away from fossil fuels. The crown prince promised to improve the business climate and create a global hub for innovation, and in October, he pursued his investment agenda at the Future Investment Initiative conference in Riyadh. However, direct foreign investment into the country totaled $5.4 billion in 2020, less than half the level of a decade ago, and well below the $19 billion that the kingdom had targeted. It was going to top $6 billion in 2021, based on data through the third quarter. That excludes the sale of a stake worth $12.4 billion in a Saudi pipeline firm to foreign investors. According to the Wall Street Journal report, one reason why the figure has stayed low is planned projects that fell through. Apple Inc. plans to open a flagship store in central Riyadh several years ago have failed. 555 Group, the developer of the Mall of America, decided not to proceed with its plans to build a multi-billion dollar complex in Saudi Arabia. And movie theater company AMC Entertainment Holdings is relinquishing greater control to its Saudi government partner as it falls behind local rivals. Robert Mogielnicki, resident scholar at the Persian Gulf States Institute think tank in Washington, D.C., said, "Although businesses are attracted to Saudi Arabia's potential, economic practicalities are still being hammered out. For long, it has been difficult to do business in Saudi Arabia, with a sluggish bureaucracy, outmoded legal system, and poor human rights record. Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman sought to purportedly change that, pledging big reforms, holding lavish investment conferences in Riyadh, and hobnobbing with Silicon Valley executives. However, his agenda stumbled in 2018 when men working for him killed the journalist Jamal Khashoggi. That scuppered big deals including with Amazon.com, Richard Branson's space tourism venture, and Hollywood super agent Ari Emanuel. Also, the Crown Prince could not change many of the old deterrents to investment, and instead, the country added new ones." Riyadh tried to resolve the issue of a cash crunch by imposing retroactive taxes on dozens of large foreign firms. During the past year and a half, companies including Uber, its regional subsidiary, Careem, and General Electric have faced huge tax liabilities and sometimes extra fines when their appeals were rejected by Saudi courts. The U.S. State Department late last year appealed in vain to the Saudi government for relief. The kingdom further angered foreign firms when it ordered them to move their regional headquarters to Riyadh from Dubai, or lose government contracts. They were also forced to employ more Saudis. Additionally, a requirement to improve local content in their products made some goods uncompetitive in comparison with imports. Furthermore, physical safety has become another concern for investors. Although the majority of the people apprehended in Prince Mohammed's crackdowns on criticism or alleged corruption have been Saudi citizens, some have been foreigners. One foreign businessman said he was detained and tortured after he had said publicly that some business laws were unfair in Saudi Arabia. Another, an American citizen, recently authorized the U.S. State Department to reveal relevant information to the media should the person be detained in Saudi Arabia. A second American citizen who sought to expand his Ohio-based nursing home operation was arrested on arrival last year. He was detained in a cramped airport holding cell for 3 days and then deported without explanation. Meanwhile, some companies which have worked in Saudi Arabia for decades have downsized their presence amid disputes over payment from government clients. Contractors on Riyadh's new subway system, including Bechtel, sent some staff home last year over a more than $1 billion payment dispute. Northrop Grumman, which has sold military equipment worth billions of dollars to Saudi Arabia, reduced its activity nearly 2 years ago after the military did not pay for products it provided. Bechtel and Northrop Grumman declined to comment. The Saudi government, meanwhile, has claimed it has reformed public procurement laws to eliminate the problem and clear the backlog of cases. The situation is often worse for smaller companies and solo entrepreneurs, for whom minor issues can turn into painful ordeals. Suleiman Salahia, a 67-year-old, owned a small business that landscaped Saudi universities and royal palaces. After the government reversed the previous round of widely touted business reforms to favor local competitors, the Palestinian investor petitioned investment officials and then sued them. He said in court he was given less than 2 minutes to plead his case before a judge ruled against him. Barred from working or leaving the country without paying hundreds of thousands of dollars in disputed fees, Suleiman Salahia remains mired in red tape and stranded in Riyadh with his wife and children, who haven't been able to complete their education or start their own careers. After Salahia, already facing the consequences of the court ruling, spoke with a Wall Street Journal reporter in 2018, Saudi police raided his home in the middle of the night, bound his hands and feet and covered his head with a bag. They stuffed him into an SUV and drove him to a small cell, where he remained for 18 days with the air conditioning running full blast and two spotlights keeping him awake. Interrogators asked about his business dealings, the lawsuits, and his meeting with a foreign journalist.
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, and let us ponder on the prophetic remarks of Hazrat Fatima Zahra, peace be upon her, the Immaculate Daughter of the Almighty's last messenger, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. I am from the brightness of Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, knowing all past and future events till the day of judgment.
With you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, childbearing. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of childbearing in the Islamic lifestyle. Well, it is something which is apparent that in the whole world we can see there is a problem of childbearing in many nations or in many countries. There are many countries whose native people are less than those who are migrated, and on top of that, obviously we can see that the ratio of the male and female or the older generation with the youngest generation is equal, and this is something which is alarming in today's world. Therefore, Islam has said and emphasized on having more children. Why? Because the cause of the generations being generated, or this human life, it goes on with the generations. If we do not have generations, the passage of time or the transformation of this generation to next generation will become harder. With the pandemic that we can see in today's world, the amount of people who are dying, these all things shows us that childbearing is one of the important topics.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. La ilaha illallah. La ilaha illallah.
Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of childbearing in Islamic lifestyle, and we said that this is a major problem in the whole world, and especially with this pandemic that we have, obviously, the people are dying more, and then we are having less children being born, and this is a major problem. When we look at the Islamic texts, we look that the Prophet has emphasized a lot on childbearing in order to have the next generations or have more children. And therefore, we have this in which he said, like, تَنَاكَهُ وَتَكْثُرُ, marry and have more children. فَإِنِّي أُبَاهِ بِكُمُ الْأُمَمَ يَوْمَ الْقِيَامَةِ وَلَوْ بِالسِّقْتِ. And he said, even if there is a miscarriage, do not worry about miscarrying, but have more children, because this will guarantee the human life in the future, because the human life needs to carry on throughout the history and transform and transfer its experiences from this generation to the next generation. And if we are not having more children, this means that we are not transferring what we need to transfer. Obviously, we are transferring the sciences, the education, the perfection to the next generation, and this is the right of our children to be born, inshallah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
News, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
Turtles get a second chance to spread their fins after being found with bellies full of plastic. They were rescued and are now being released back to the sea in Argentina. Two green turtles and four loggerhead turtles were saved from fishing nets in Buenos Aires province. The group was taken to Grupo Marina Foundation, where they recuperated after purging 10 types of plastic from their bodies. Rehabilitation of the turtles lasted over a month and included blood tests and other procedures to make sure they were free of plastic. A biologist with the foundation says the danger of plastic is that it's silent, and usually its dangers are so gradual that it goes unnoticed.
Many times the animal appears to be in perfect health. However, during the checkup and evaluation, we found a large amount of this material inside. So it is important to get rid of the plastic before the condition worsens and it ends up causing the deaths of the specimens.
The turtles had mistakenly eaten plastic, thinking it was food. Wind, waves, and sunshine break down discarded plastic into tiny pieces, which litter ocean waters. Much of this plastic waste can be found on beds of seaweed that turtles forage for food. This trash ends up fatally clogging their bellies, causing the decline in the population of these graceful reptiles. The Indian-administered Kashmir has the world's only floating post office. A 200-year-old houseboat on a famous Dal Lake in Srinagar, set up during the British rule in India. The post office has survived throughout the years because of its charm. Our correspondent Shahana Bhatt has more.
The Indian-administered Kashmir was once a princely independent state, out of bounds for outsiders. As the ruler of Jammu and Kashmir, this allowed non-locals to own property in this picturesque region. During the British rule in the Indian subcontinent, many Britons tried to find an alternative way of living in Kashmir. Thus, houseboat on the world-famous Dal Lake came into existence. Today, the lake is a home to hundreds of such boats, which are a major attraction for tourists around the globe. This one is a unique boat, the only floating post office in the whole world. This is a 200-year-old boat built by the British. It has truly stood the test of time, as it still functions.
Post office, Dal Lake.
This is not an ordinary post office. We're standing on a heritage property. I've enjoyed my work since the very first day I came here. It's a unique experience to be working here. And every day, I get the chance to meet people from different corners of the world.
The boat is not limited to postal services. It also has a small museum where colorful stamps from the 1980s are put to display, along with a collection of rare philately stamps. The post office is a hot tourist destination in the region. Locals also come to this post office to send postcards to their loved ones, inviting them to visit Kashmir.
floating post office.
In the age of technology, electronic mails, e-cards and other internet applications have made it extremely easy for people to communicate. But sending a postcard from this floating post office gives one a really different feeling.
The floating post office underwent reconstruction in 2011 and is currently a part of the Indian postal system. Recently, the office started offering banking services, thus attracting more locals.
I have opened an account here for my daughter. It's hassle-free and this place suits my mind. It's not like the usual offices. Visiting this place with kids is like a trip.
Yet another attraction of this post office is this souvenir shop, from where everyone can buy postcards, stamps, traditional crafts and greeting cards.
This floating post office in Kashmir's Dal Lake is like a time machine. It brings people back to two centuries ago and shows them the history of the beautiful region. Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Now let's go to Germany to hear the heartwarming story of how technology is turning a young boy's life around. 7-year-old Joshua has a severe lung disease which has made him unable to go to school. But now he can attend his classes from home with the help of an avatar robot. The device sits in Joshua's Berlin classroom, enabling him to listen to the classroom in real time to what his teacher and classmates are saying. Joshua can even interact with everyone else by making the robot display a blinking signal.
Each year, a village in Vietnam becomes awash in red and orange as it gears up for the Lunar New Year with spectacular mass production of incense. January is usually the busiest time when villages are dyeing, drying and whittling bamboo bark to make the fragrance sticks. Also, the scent of each batch is carefully tailored to suit the tastes of the regions where they will be sold. Most households here are involved in this ancient trade and sales are a major part of their livelihoods. The Lunar New Year will begin on the first day of February. Around this time, sales tick up with throngs of people crowding into temples to light incense during worship. A 3-year-old girl from China's Hebei province has astonished ski enthusiasts with her impressive snowboarding talent.
Hello everybody, I'm Wang Shishi. I'm 3 years old and I can snowboard now.
Shishi's skills have attracted a lot of attention as a toddler boldly tackles the slopes. She makes snowboarding look easy. Despite her tender age, she is already taming the slopes at a higher skill level than a number of other aspiring snowboarders. Her parents say she has been practicing for less than 2 weeks and her progress is startling.
I remember several years ago, I felt quite scared when I was on the advanced slope, but a mother told me that Shishi started to snowboard down right when she got to the advanced trail. She was not afraid at all.
Her parents say she quickly grasped the snowboarding movements and techniques, including some of the trickier swivels and turns. They say Shishi is enjoying the progress she is making on the slopes, and every chance she gets, she asks to go snowboarding. The young snowboarder's mum says the hobby has also brought the family closer together as they enjoy a shared passion together.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
The chronic shortage of human organs has always been an issue for patients, especially those suffering from heart diseases. But now a major scientific breakthrough is in the making. U.S. surgeons have successfully implanted a heart
from a genetically modified pig into a man. Doctors had said the patient, 57-year-old, was unable to have human transplant because of his health conditions. But now he is recovering from his latest surgery. The surgeons say the man is being carefully monitored to determine how the new organ is performing. But for those who want to know why pigs, here is why. Pigs are considered ideal donors because of their size and rapid growth, among other things.
You know, it is a game changer because, we will have these organs readily available. If this works, and I hope it will work, we'll have these organs available. We have the technique of genetically modifying. So if there are more tweaking required for modifying the genes, we will be able to do that. And, can customize basically the heart or the organ for the patient.
The transplant is the first of its kind in the world and follows years of research. In the U.S. alone, about 110,000 people are currently waiting for an organ transplant. Also, more than 6,000 patients die each year before getting one. Kingdom of Ice and Snow. Don't be surprised. It's an international sculpture festival held annually in the Chinese city of Harbin. This year, the venue brims with sports elements in a runner-up to the 2022 Winter Olympics scheduled in Beijing. The annual Winter Festival is the largest of its kind, where sculptors spend weeks using ice and snow to create structures under a given theme. The upcoming Winter Games is the theme this year, as one can visualize giant statues of Bing Duan Duan. The adorable panda mascots are major attractions of the exhibition. The chief designer says an ice tower standing in the center of the park features 24 vertical structures, referring to the 24th Winter Olympics.
In terms of the design concept, the sculpture features 24 vertical structures, referring to the 24th Winter Olympics, to be held in Beijing. The spiral array form also indicated the proactive spirit of the Olympics. The free and upward effect is a vivid presentation of the Olympic flame.
The annual festival, which is being held for about 3 decades, usually attracts domestic and foreign tourists. But COVID-19 restrictions have limited the crowds over the past couple of years. Harbin is located in northeast China and receives cold winter wind from Siberia. An average winter temperature there is around minus 17 degrees Celsius.
South Koreans enjoy a wildlife refuge near the Korean Demilitarized Zone. New tours opened in November from the DMZ Crane Peace Town. Frank Smith has more in this report.
A new hiking trail and birdwatching facility opened up in South Korea this past November. DMZ Crane Peace Town created special birding cabins and guides wilderness hikes north of the 38th parallel, near the DMZ, the fortified border with North Korea. The Demilitarized Zone was created with the armistice that ended the Korean War back in 1953. Guard post fencing and a 2 to 4 kilometer wide buffer zone now separate North Korea and South Korea, with that no man's land becoming home to rejuvenated plant and wildlife. Local officials see wildlife tourism as an opportunity to promote inter-Korean peace.
Cranes know no borders. That's why we're promoting the crane as a symbol of peace, as they can freely come and go between North and South Korea.
Each winter, several species of birds, especially cranes, spend time to rest and feed in the area, where there's little development and few people. Officials say more birds have been coming here because of depleted feeding grounds in the north.
Shirwan has wide plains suitable for growing rice. Cranes eat the grain that has fallen after harvest, and it's the best place for cranes because it's located north of the civilian control line.
A safe vantage point to photograph the wildlife is provided at the Hantan River near Yangji Village, attracting birders from far afield.
I left home at 4 in the morning to come here to photograph wild birds, swans and cranes. It's good because there are many mallard ducks and other birds. They fight for food with each other, but it's fun.
Cranes are considered a sacred symbol of longevity and fortune here and designated a national monument. Frank Smith, Cherwon County, South Korea.
In Germany, tasty bits of crumbs are all it takes for hundreds of sheep and goats to participate in the campaign to encourage vaccination against COVID-19. 700 farm animals were arranged into a 100-meter-long syringe in a pasture south of Hamburg. The shepherd says she spent several days practicing the herd. The sheep and goats were lured by pieces of bread, which they quickly gobbled up after being released into the field. Helping the shepherd was an organizer who works with a flock to run team training exercises for companies. He says they wanted to do something to grab people's attention and encourage them to get COVID jabs.
Well, if I were to just write it on Facebook, nobody would notice it. And my job is to have company teams leading some thousand sheep from A to B, and I have noticed how enthusiastically the sheep are received, and that it simply reaches people deep inside, which is perhaps not possible rationally, with rational arguments.
Etzold says sheep bring out the soft side of people and hopes that this will help convey the message. So far, the campaign has received a positive response, with videos of the sheep arrangement going viral. Official data shows Germany has the lowest inoculation rate among Western European nations. This is mainly attributed to vaccination hesitancy, as well as a small percentage who vehemently oppose getting the jab.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Thank you. in the limelight.
The United States of America, an upstart militarized country that holds as hostage many of the so-called third world countries, created by the retreating European colonialists and has fattened on their economies, is the prime example of a hegemon which, as part of its propaganda war against independent countries, shamelessly resorts to hypocrisy. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Kahan International staff writer. This article is published under the heading Hypocrisy, the Hallmark of the U.S. Stay tuned for more. It is but natural for countries of the same geographical region, especially those sharing age-old ties of civilization, to get together and explore areas of cooperation beneficial to them in a variety of fields. This ought not to irk outside powers, since a regional grouping does not mean the start of confrontation with other regional blocs in today's concept of the global village, where worldwide cooperation with respect for the independence and sovereignty of all others is the key to the harmony of humanity and peaceful coexistence. Only hegemonic powers, whose principal pastime is meddling in the efforts of other countries and imposing will on weak links on the pretext of friendship that is actually barely disguised hypocrisy, abhor the idea of cooperation among regional states. That is the recent start of implementation of the 25-year Iran-China Accord. The United States of America, an upstart militarized country that holds as hostage many of the so-called third world countries created by the retreating European colonialists and has fattened on their economies, is the prime example of a hegemon, which, as part of its propaganda war against independent countries, shamelessly resorts to hypocrisy. The Islamic Republic of Iran, the prime victim of the extraterritorial evil of the U.S., has over the past four decades safeguarded not only its own independence and sovereignty, but also the rights and aspirations of the people of the region, to the chagrin of Washington, which, in sheer frustration, is presently fueling the flames of war in Yemen, along with its provocation against Russia in Ukraine and against China in Taiwan. That is the reason the American regime is angry at Iran's growing positive influence in the neighborhood and beyond, as well as its strategic cooperation with international heavyweights China and Russia. With Moscow and Beijing rejecting Washington's economic terrorism against Tehran, and with public opinion in the U.S. questioning the White House's unwise policy of prolonging the unwanted presence of Yankee troops in Syria and Iraq at the risk of their return home in body bags, President Joe Biden's men have stepped up their hypocrisy. For instance, the Biden regime remains silent on Saudi Arabia's recent bombing campaign in Yemen, and even Riyadh's pointless accusations against Iran. The U.S. State Department spokesperson, Ned Price, made a laughing stock of himself by claiming the flow of Iranian weapons to Yemen is enabling the Houthi offensive against Marib. He or his superiors didn't even bother to think that if the alleged 1,400